Well, we have a very interesting show for you today, my friend. We're going to talk about the Ted Binion case, the murder in Las Vegas, or was it a suicide, or could the mob have done it? It's still there, the questions, after several years and two convictions. The convictions were overturned by the Supreme Court. Prosecutorial misconduct was alleged, and as a result of that, October this year, we'll have another trial. It appears right now that both Sandy Murphy and Rick Tavish, the two defendants, will be back in the courtroom being tried again at the same time. However, things are subject to change in this fast-moving case. And we have a very interesting person with us on the line from Las Vegas who is going to tell us a little bit about the details and the background and the latest developments. Kathy Scott is our guest. Kathy Scott is one of my favorite people, a great investigative reporter and an author. Death in the Desert, the Ted Binion homicide case. It's a great read. Good fast read. We're going to talk to Kathy here in just a minute about Ted Binion and why the judge is still there, Judge Joseph Bonaventure. Hanky-panky in the courtroom, in my opinion. We'll find out, though. We'll find out what Kathy Scott thinks. I mean, after all, she was there almost every day during the original trial. Interesting thing that happened recently in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, they put out a survey. They do it every year. I wish newspapers would do this all over the country, in which the lawyers that practice in the district court, in fact, all of the courts in Nevada, they're sent questionnaires and they answer them on the, you know, the judge, his behavior, his knowledge, his ability to control his courtroom, is he fair, et cetera, et cetera. Interesting thing about Judge Bonaventure was that there were 21 district judges in Las Vegas, and only four scored below Judge Bonaventure in ability, that is, the way to keep the case up to date. In other words, the judge knowing what's going on in his courtroom, and also in fairness. So that means Judge Bonaventure really did not get a very good rating. Most of his ratings were around 35, 36, 32, 31% on different categories. He was not the worst by any means. There were a couple other judges there. One had 15% overall favorability, and fairness, another one had 13%. But like I say, most of them had well over 50 or 60%. Let's go ahead and get Kathy on the line here. One of my favorite people. Intelligent, good-looking. She's all of those. She's a reporter that gets to the facts. I enjoy all your books, Kathy. Thanks for joining us. I know you've been living with this case for some time. Kathy, Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the Ted Binion case. Your book is a great read, by the way.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
And you know, you're still following this case. You may have to write another book.
Yeah, a never-ending story. Well, you know, the story interested me from the beginning. I, of course, you know, went into the trial with a different opinion and came out, you know, with a whole new perspective on the case, but I did sit through every, you know, bloody moment of that.
And so when you went into the trial, you figured it was a slam dunk or something? Or?
You know, the papers, I mean, it was incredible what was coming out at the DA's office. I mean, there were leaks as big as, a dam. But, the prosecution, they were all able to get their side of it out, but, the defense wasn't leaking, so I thought that they had committed a crime, and I, you know, Sandy, didn't think a murder had occurred, mm-hmm. and I walked out knowing one had not.
You're buying into probably it was just an overdose.
It was an overdose. I mean, I was kind of into the trial a little bit. I hadn't been writing about it at the time. I was freelancing for Reuters News Service, the New York Times and also ATBNews.com, which was in New York, and it was an online newspaper. And so I went into the trial writing for both Reuters and ATBNews.com. So I kind of, you know, did a little bit of reporting early on, but you know, wasn't that up to speed. But, you know, I interviewed all the players. I interviewed everybody and then sat through the trial. And it's unbelievable to me that two people got convicted. It was, you know, the prosecution was all smoke and mirrors.
Well, what did you think about the defense case originally? I mean, do you think the jury was just skewed a little bit, or did?
Well, I think the jury was skewed in some respects by the judge, because there are certain things he wouldn't allow in, and then also, you know, during the trial, I mean, he would just get on the, you know, yell at the defense team, and then just sort of, you know, bend over backwards for the prosecution. So it was clearly obvious to everybody in the gallery, and I'm sure to, you know, to the jury, that, you know, the judge was clearly, you know, in favor of the prosecution. I think that had a role, and I think also the things that were not allowed in, you know, that should have been testimony and evidence that, you know, that debunked the prosecution's theory, because it clearly is a theory. I mean, this was a strictly circumstantial evidence case. Circumstantial evidence didn't pan out, and that's why they're getting a new trial.
Yeah, and I thought that their case was pretty far out, the prosecution, but the jury evidently bought it.
Yeah, and I think they weren't sympathetic at all towards Sandy and Rick, and I think that. Also, the blitz of media, you know, we found out later, of course, that, you know, some of them had been paying attention to the media and news accounts, which, you know, they were admonished every day not to. I can tell you a very interesting thing. I just did jury duty not too long ago, and a friend of mine who's a former reporter just did jury duty, and I wrote about this afterward, but, you know, I'm in the jury room, and I got picked for a trial, and we're supposed to go in and be interviewed by the judge and everybody. And I'm sitting there in the room. There are a couple of rooms, and one of the rooms attached is only for jurors. And CNN came on, local news came on the TV. I said, you know, why is the news in the jury room? The jurors on a, say, in the Ted Binion case, you know, do they come in this room? And he said, yes, all the jurors. There's a TV with news. Now, that to me was, I mean, it should be fixed on one station, and nobody should be able to change it. I mean, jurors were going up and reaching up and switching channels right and left. And I think that's a problem. I mean, it's because, of course, if you're watching one program, you're watching, say, Dr. Phil, you're going to have breaks and say, watch channel, you know, watch news at 5 and see the latest, and the, you know,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Even just the teasers would be tough. So I think that they were inundated with media. I do believe they knew what was going on with the case.
Well, you know, the little secret, and you know this more than a lot of people because you cover a lot of criminal action in U.S. courts, both federal and state, the judges really have much more control of these things than most people believe.
Oh, you could just see it. You could just see it. And then they gave them. In the end, they gave. You know, here there were 17. I think the court clerk said guilty 17 times at the end of that trial, and at the same hearing, you know, when the verdict had come in, at the same hearing, at the end of it, the jurors handed the judge a thank you note, and he read it out loud, and it was just, you know, happy and bubbly, and, you know, and it was like, it was so inappropriate, but you could tell that the timing was very bad, but you could tell that the jurors just really took to him, and they followed his lead. I mean, he clearly did not like, you know, to be biased.
Later. What about the judge? Judge Bonaventure is hearing this case too. I guess once a judge he has it, huh?
I think I talked to Dick DeGuerin, you know, who was representing Sandy Murphy.
Yes.
Before he quit, and he told me that he wasn't necessarily going to ask that Judge Bonaventure be recused because he said he thought he was being fair. You know, that's before, I think he said that before Sandy was given bail, and it was also before Rick Cavish was not, you know, allowed to get out on time served. And it was a different Judge Bonaventure in the courtroom the day he turned down Rick Cavish. But I think that you've got some problems with that judge because the Supreme Court said that there, you know, were some things that weren't done right. And I think, you know, the Nevada Supreme Court, and I think that based on that, I think that they ought to get a new judge. And why is this going to be the same dog and pony show? Because Sandy Murphy no longer has a power hitter of a judge, an attorney. It's going to be the same song and dance. They're going to bulldoze.
Yeah, let's bring our listeners up to speed. Now, Sandy Murphy is Alan Bail. And we'll talk about her attorney problem here in a moment. But Rick Cavish evidently had some other charges, and Bonaventure sent him right back.
Yeah, they're all connected, of course, and that was bogus, too. There was no evidence. It was all circumstances. All, you know, it's unbelievable, the testimony on the charges that he, you know, that he got convicted of. And Sandy sat next to him, you know, at the defense table. And it was as if she was being tried for the same thing, and even though some of his charges were different. And so he has served those charges, he has served time and almost the full amount. He's eligible for parole, I believe, in August. And he's been very good, an exemplary inmate, you know. He hasn't gotten into any trouble in prison, and I'd be very surprised if he does not get out on parole. So he may be out if it's granted before the trial starts, which would help him.
Well, let's talk a little bit about his attorney. His attorney is a little different.
The one is, he's ranked number six attorney in the United States.
Have you had a chance to talk to him yet?
I interviewed both him and Dick McGarren, and I've seen both of them in court. And I also interviewed them I did a cover story for Las Vegas City Life on the two of them. And he's not materialistic. He took a vow of poverty when he became an attorney. He's a throwback to the 60s. You know, he's gray-haired and has a ponytail, but he represents a lot of his clients pro bono, and he believes in getting people off who aren't guilty. And he is the first attorney in the United States, I believe he did that in the 70s or 80s, to get a man off of death row, an innocent man off of death row. So, you know, not everybody who's convicted is guilty, believes in that sort of thing. So Rick is very lucky he has Tony Farrow representing him.
Yeah, and of course I don't want to get into those discussions on this show because we're talking about the Ted Binion case, but my experience is about 20-25%, maybe 30% of the people in jail they might be guilty of something, but not necessarily guilty of what they were charged.
And Sandy Murphy, I mean, the one thing she did wrong, which wasn't a crime, was she knew that, she had known that Ted Binion took too many drugs. But she'd seen him go over and over and over do that. I mean, the man bought his own drugs. She had nothing to do with that. And he partied all night with them, and she, in the morning he was sick. And she was up with him since 4 a.m. in the morning, and she left the house at whatever time it was, 10 or 11. She left the house, and she knew that he had taken too many drugs. So she probably should have gotten him help. But having seen him go through things like that before...
Kathy Scott, one of the great reporters in my estimation, you probably refer to yourself as... I'm not necessarily a reporter anymore, even though you have a great...
I do refer to myself as a reporter because, you know, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool reporter. You know, there's ink in my blood. But you know, I'm also a true crime author, you know, and biographies, and I write a column, you know, Crime and Punishment. But even writing a column, you know, when I'm writing it and talking to people, I'm reporting. So, yeah, I do refer to myself as a reporter.
Now, Sandy Murphy, first of all, I guess we need to talk about her benefactor here. The fellow is evidently paying her court case. What's the story on Fuller?
Well, Fuller's just a guy. He's actually a distant cousin, I think, quite distant of Sandy's. He's from Ireland. He's been in the United States for a long time. He's a very nice man. I spoke to him. He's in his early 80s. I've sat with him and had coffee with him. And that is, I'm trying to think when that was. I think it was right before the trial started, the first trial. But he's,
I mean, did he know Sandy before, or did he just think she was being, unfairly accused?
He thought she was being unfairly, he made arrangements to meet her. And the guy's loaded. And
they're loaded with money.
Loaded with money. He doesn't have any kids. Doesn't have a wife. You know, he's got a brother in Ireland. He's got distant family. He's the, you can find him on the internet. In my book, there's a chapter on him. But, you know, he comes from money. They own inns. And there's also, I believe, some oil money in there somewhere. So, I mean, the guy wanted to help her.
The first thing I thought about when he came into the scene, and I've been following it, of course, not there in the courtroom, and not knowing the people and the players like you do. But I thought, well, does this guy have something against Becky Behan and Nick? Or?
He's just, and he's not a dirty old man. Everybody's made him out to be, that he was interested in Sandy. And of course he's not. And he's a very gentlemanly man, very, very, polite and, carries himself well. And he just thought, I asked him the same thing. And I've talked to other people. I mean, he just thinks that an egregious charge was made against her, and he's got the money, and he wanted to help her, and that's what he's been doing. Unfortunately, he's gotten a few people, to help him, and they're not necessarily all well-intentioned, I guess.
And I guess that's the reason Dick DeGaron left the case.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Dick DeGaron is, I don't know how much those people realize what a huge loss that was to Sandy when he left. I mean, her main attorney now, her lead attorney for the time being, at least, Mike Cristalli, while he may be a very good attorney, he's been a trial attorney for 7 years. This is a murder charge.
Yeah, and a high profile one at that.
And I don't know what kind of...
Well, I mean, they even got rid of... Alan Dershowitz, who was very, very good in getting their appeal.
And Dick DeGaron took the case thinking, he told me when I interviewed him the second time, because I did interview him twice for my recent story, that he told me that he thought when he signed on that Alan Dershowitz was going to be helping. Now, Alan Dershowitz is the reason these guys got a new trial. He's the one who prepared the appellate case, and he's the one who argued it before the Nevada Supreme Court, and it would have been great if he had been sitting at the defense table. There was someone, Fuller hired the non-lawyer, and I'm not going to name him, but the non-lawyer he hired in, to do research, who is not a legal clerk. He has no legal background. He's educating himself as he goes along. He didn't like Alan Dershowitz, and he's awfully expensive, and this is her life. She's fighting for her life right now. They let Alan Dershowitz go, and then this non-lawyer was telling Dick DeGaron what motions he thought he ought to make, and Dershowitz DeGaron told me, I'm not going to be a party to filing counterproductive motions. DeGaron knows what he's doing. The non-lawyer doesn't, and there are going to be some motions filed that are counterproductive, according to him. And those motions have probably been filed.
You're talking about motions have been filed. I guess it was...
Pre-trial. Lots of pre-trial motions filed. If you don't file them before the trial and the deadline's already passed, then you can't bring up those issues during the trial. So it's very important to get the right ones in there. And apparently, that hasn't been done. I mean, down the road, if she's convicted, I think because of this person, she's got grounds for another... appeal.
The Tavish had his lawyers filed prosecutorial misconduct.
He didn't have them do it. They're big guys. They know what they're doing. And in looking over the case, they determined and that there was prosecutorial misconduct. And and Dick Bagirin also filed, he told me that he also filed the same motion before he left the team. So those will be a part of the case. So because those
now the judge, yeah, Judge Bonaventure will hear those motions too, right?
Well, and he was a party to those prosecutorial misconduct. He was there.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean,
a little awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, and nothing's been ruled on that yet, right?
No, and the fact that Bonaventure hasn't recused himself, you know, because he does have, you know, a few little issues. He's a little close to the case.
Well, I mean, he was over, he's seen over Binion's casino.
The fact that there was a book, and I'm not going to name it,
Right.
I hate to give it publicity, but the fact that there was, because it was basically the prosecution said it to the person who wrote the book, and the person didn't verify anything. It was a totally one-sided book. And Bonaventure and his clerk at the time showed up at the
book signing, right?
Binion's Horseshoe with Becky Bennett. They sat at a table next to the author and signed books with the author. They were invited there. And they sat. Now, Bonaventure has said, I needed a book, I couldn't find one. I'm telling you, you could find one in any bookstore in town that week. Any bookstore in town, all over the place. And he went in, said he couldn't find a book, so he knew there was a book signing, so he went in. And gee, Al Lasso, his clerk, happened to go in too, and they both signed books. They didn't sign a couple of books, they signed books. Bonaventure, not Joe.
And the interesting thing I find about that whole thing is, immediately you think about, well, he's in the pocket of somebody, but it just may be ego-driven as well.
Maybe.
Well, you don't want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
There's a lot of money flowing around. There was a lot of stuff going around. Maybe.
Well, yeah, the million-dollar display disappeared even.
That was sold.
At Binion's.
Well, no, it was sold. Actually, I wrote a story about it at the time. Becky Bannon, when she took over, she and her husband took over the Horseshoe. They couldn't get rid of the old stuff quick enough, and they got rid of the restaurant where everybody used to go, and they got rid of the $1 million and the photographer, you know, where people used to come from
the
country to have their photos taken. Big drawing card.
And it seemed to me like they, of course, it's not open now.
She talked to the group she bought the money, she sold the money to. There was a huge safe that her father had, and he used to keep money in, and that was on display. Beautiful old safe, you know, turn of the century. And she sold that, too, and I actually interviewed the guy who bought it. I forget what he paid for it. She was liquidating things that were drawing cards. And she, you know, she took the tournament, you know, the...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the poker tournament.
World Series of Poker.
Yeah, 30 days to 15 days. They started changing, you know, what Binion's was all about. And that, you know, that broke Ted Binion's heart. He was spiraling. You know, he had his gaming license removed. He lost the Horseshoe. You know, he was heir to it. He lost it. And he got deeper and deeper into drugs. And Sandy turned to Rick Tavish for friendship, and it turned romantic.
Kathy Scott, obviously, they didn't run it very well, or something went wrong, because Binion's is closed.
Yeah, well, you know, my sense of it is the family Nick and Becky Bennett's son was, you know, spending a lot of money too. He was involved, but they were spending money right and left. You know, payroll wasn't made a couple of times, the checks bounced, and the reason it was shut down, you know, the marshal's office came in and shut the place down suddenly, and they didn't know it was coming. They weren't paying the property, they weren't paying, apparently, employee taxes, they weren't paying the insurance premiums for their employees, and employees would go for medical care, and they were refused treatment. So that was what, and union dues, everything was falling down around them. They weren't paying anything. They haven't paid the property.
Well, I mean, the place was still doing business.
The place was still doing business, but it had slowed down a lot because, you know, they weren't, it just wasn't the same place. But the employees all hung in there, and the ground under Binion's, you know, is leased. And they haven't paid their lease, oh, for 2 or 3 years. They owed millions on that. They owed $2 million to the union for insurance, and so that's why they got shut down.
Now these tapes, Nick talking to Ted that surfaced.
Yeah,
it's kind of strange they surfaced this late. Why didn't they come out before the first?
They did come out before the first trial. They did. They came out during it and before it.
I don't remember Channel 8 or anybody playing it like they did this time.
Well, they were, I knew about them.
Okay.
It was low key, but you know, you have to figure, in this town, it's a media pack, and so when one outlet starts reporting a certain way, everybody goes with it. You know, I compare it with when Siegfried and Roy, you know, the attack, believe me, that was a tiger mauling. Nobody wanted to say anything. It's like the emperor has a new coat. Nobody wants to say he doesn't. And so you have the pack mentality going in the same direction, and nobody wants to, you know, go against whatever's being said and say, hey, you know, and write a different story.
The old conventional wisdom.
Going sort of pro-prosecution the whole time. Now that's changed because of the Nevada Supreme Court ruling. And then, you know, I don't go along with, you know, I'm not a necessarily a conformist. I write what I see and I write what I learn.
Well, that's one reason I like you.
Well, thank you. But like in the Roy Horn thing, if you don't mind my mentioning that, you know, he was mauled, but they had a PR machine come out and say, oh, the tiger was pulling him off the stage because he had fallen. That cat was dragging him off the stage, and he had him by the throat, and he wasn't helping him by any means, but that was the big PR machine, and not one person would say anything differently. I wrote a column saying, you know, white lies were coming out of there about white tigers, and it basically all stopped. That's the mentality here in Las Vegas.
So how are you being treated by the media? I mean, you know,
you go to things, you see people. I've been here for, you know, 12 years.
Yeah.
And you go and you see things. I've been a reporter here for a long time, and I think, you know, everybody kind of respects each other. But, you know, I don't go with the, you know, a lot of times if a reporter, you know, breaks away and reports something different, then everybody starts chasing that, you know, and that's kind of what happens here. But
my point about Nick and his tapes there, he sounds like a cheap two-bit hood, in my opinion, rather than...
It's a very dysfunctional family.
It sounds, well, of course it is.
mean,
that's being polite.
His son, I mean, it's a fact. His son was one of those who opened fire and did a drive-by shooting at Ted Binion's house, and, you know, before he died. And Becky and Ted, you know, from their little dysfunctional childhood, Becky and Ted, literally, had taken contracts out on each other. That never came out. But the fact is, there may have been people who wanted to kill Ted Binion. And you know, Ted wasn't the nicest guy in the world.
First thing I thought of was some kind of organized crime here.
Right, and that did come out, that the mob wanted him dead too, and that the FBI had warned Ted Binion, and they didn't warn Herbie Blitzstein. They knew that somebody wanted, you know, Herbie Blitzstein, you know, who was friends with Ted and was a mobster. They wanted him dead. Well, he did get dead, but because the FBI didn't warn him. But they warned Ted.
He died in Arizona of a drug overdose or something?
No, he got shot in the back of the head
okay.
in Las Vegas.
Okay, well, that's hard to explain that as a natural cause.
Well, and the FBI was sitting out surveilling his house when he was killed,
mm-hmm.
When Herbie was killed. But Ted got warned about the same time that the mob wanted him dead. Now, other people say, see, you know, somebody else killed him. But Ted wasn't killed. He killed himself. I mean, he was killed, but he did it himself. He wasn't murdered. So that's all interesting in that people wanted him dead, but it's not surprising because he wasn't a very nice man. He and Nick Bannon did not have a good relationship, nor did he with Becky, and they were very dysfunctional and took contracts out on each other.
The interesting...
But never executed them.
Yeah, All in the Family, right.
Oh, dysfunctional. Yeah, crazy.
The thing that, you know, I keeps coming back to my mind about this whole thing is that why? And I guess it's money. They want to control of the casino.
Well, I think Jack, and my understanding is Jack and his Ted Binion's brother, Jack, his older brother.
Yeah, that's the only one of the group I've met. I've met him several times.
And he was groomed by his father. I mean, you know, to run, Ted was groomed as a pit boss. You know, so Ted was great in the casino, and Jack was great at money. Becky worked in the kitchen with her mother. She was, that's old-fashioned, that's the way Benny Binion was. That's how he treated his kids.
Yeah.
One of the kids died of an overdose when she was, in her 20s or something. And another daughter lives in Arizona. It doesn't have anything to do with anything, but the others were involved. And Nick Binion wasn't allowed, he wasn't given a gaming license in Nevada for some improprieties outside of Nevada, and wasn't allowed to run the casino, but everybody knew he was. And so they literally ran Binion's into the ground.
Jack still operates the one in Mississippi,
yeah, and he's got the rights to the name. But the thing is, I was told that Jack and Ted had always planned to, as it started failing, the two of them were going to jump in, buy their sister out, and run it again. That was their plan. But Ted was so depressed because he had not only lost his gaming license, but then his father had bought up Montana property for years. He had a Montana ranch. He had buffalo on it, horses.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Ted, as a kid, used to go there and spend a lot of time. And as an adult, too, he used to go there a lot. And his dad was like him. They used to bury money. And Becky and Jack overruled him, and the other sister overruled Ted. They sold that property, and that was before Ted died. And everybody said that was the final straw that threw Ted over the edge, and he started doing more and more drugs.
They got rid of
the Montana ranch. He loved it.
I mean, the old man used to go up there quite often.
Oh, he loved it. I mean, Benny Benny's probably rolling in his grave right now. But that broke Ted's heart, and I talked to a lot of people who said he was devastated by it. So he lost his gaming license, and he lost the property. He'd lost the horseshoe. He couldn't even step foot in it. The man was depressed, and he did accidentally kill himself.
You mentioned something very interesting. Ted used to like to bury money, and we'll talk about that when we come back.
Good story.
Okay, we'll be right back.
If you've been a regular listener to us, you know we've talked about carbohydrates and how they help cells communicate. Glycobiology and nutrition have never really been adequately investigated together. I mean, if you pick up a nutrition book, all you read about are essential vitamins, minerals, proteins, and fats. Sugars are currently recognized only as a source of energy, not as being essential to good health. In fact, the food that most of us eat has only two sugars, mainly because it's not vine ripened. The cells use six other sugars that are used by cells to communicate that must be manufactured by the body or obtained from dietary supplements. Glyconutrients quickly provide the six other sugars for our body's cells. Research going back to November of 1998 shows that some of these glyconutrients and the cell composition is more common than anybody thinks. Dr. Catherine Frisbee would like you to click on our healthy food banner on our website and get more information about this. It could mean all the difference in your quality of life. We're talking with Kathy Scott, and what is the real story on the silver out there at Pahrump? I mean, I guess that was Ted's ranch or something?
Yeah, Ted had a ranch out in Pahrump, and he had a few acres, and then he had some land a mile away off the highway. I mean, literally on the highway. There was just some land that could be used for, like, a convenience store, you know. And he had commissioned Rick Tavish, who went after he met him, who, you know, was a contractor. He had commissioned him to bury it. And when you bury it, you build a concrete vault in the ground. I mean, this was a sophisticated concrete vault. He paid him $40,000 to bury the silver. And he told, and no one knew where it was, you know, except for the guys who did it, who helped him bury it, you know, the guys he hired to build the vault and put the silver coins in there. They're all in bags. Silver bars, I think there might have been some gold bars. I have a listing of it in my book. It's just a lot of silver. And Ted had, I interviewed a guy in Beverly Hills. Ted had talked to him, and the guy had come out. He's with a big silver liquidating company, and Ted had to get it. He was given so many days to get it out of the basement of Binion's Horseshoe, because that's where he kept it. So instead of liquidating it, he was going to wait for the price of silver to come up. I mean, he even hired the man, and the man came in with two armored vehicles. And Ted changed his mind and said, no, I'm going to have somebody bury it on my property. So Rick and his crew went out and built this concrete vault and buried it in the ground. And he told him, hey, if anything ever happens to me, which would be a natural thing to say, because Ted wasn't advertising where it was. You'll make sure my daughter, Bonnie, gets the silver, take it to the ranch. So after he died, Rick hired a crew and called the sheriff, who was then Sheriff Liskey. He was campaigning. Long story. Am I doing okay?
Yeah, you're doing fine.
He was campaigning. Liskey, the sheriff, was campaigning, you know, against some guys. Let me tell you, Pahrump is not the nicest place in the world. It's a very Western sort of atmosphere.
Yeah, it's still like the old West.
Very much so, Nye County. And it was a dirty, dirty sheriff's campaign and dirty, dirty race and, you know, doing all over the place. Well, Rick called the sheriff and said, hey, I'm coming out. We're coming out with strobe lights. We're going to try to get there before dark, but they got delayed. One of the trucks didn't arrive, and some of the employees, and it's, you know, it's an hour and a half drive out there, maybe longer because he had to go slowly because of the heavy equipment. And he told the sheriff he was going to be there, and then he called the sheriff again and notified him that he was going to be late, but they'd be out there with the, you know, the night lights, and they'd be working on the side of the road. They were going to take the silver out, put it in trucks, and take it down to the property a mile away to Savage's, or I'm sorry, to Binion's property. So he gets out there. Two sheriff's deputies who didn't like Liskey were on their way to Terrible Herbs, which is right next door to the property off the highway where they were unburying it. And they were just loading it up on the truck. And they hadn't finished. It wasn't completely done. And these two sheriff's deputies go, whoa, what's going on? Because Liskey didn't notify anybody. By the way, he was at the chicken ranch when he got a call that sheriff's deputy.
The things that Western novels are made of.
And so these two sheriff's deputies approached these guys and say, hey, what are you doing? You know, and they said, oh, we're you know, unearthing, you know, some property. I don't know if they told them it was silver. They were unearthing property and that they had notified the sheriff that they would be there, and the sheriff said, no problem. They just wanted them to know they'd be working on the side of the road, and that's why they were there. And so they called Liskey, the sheriff's deputies did, and said, you better come on over here. Because they were campaigning for the guy Liskey was running against, the sheriff was. Complicated. They get out there, and Liskey's kind of in an awkward position because these guys said, well, you should have told us. You know, they're doing something. We don't know what they're doing. And so they halted it, took Rick over to the sheriff's office to interview him. I don't believe they booked him or arrested him for anything because he, at that, I can't remember all the details specifically from the men or later. But they took him in for questioning, and then the sheriff's office took the silver. Do you know where they put it? They spread it all out on a parking lot for days.
The silver?
Some of it disappeared. So they spread it out in the parking lot in front of the sheriff's office, which at the time was like a little bitty, you know, I think a trailer building. Now they've got a bigger one. I mean, this is real down-home Vegas, Nevada. And so then
so people would help themselves.
Right. And Sandy and Rick were never caught with any silver. Nothing was ever found in their home. She lived in an apartment, and he lived in a place. Nothing was ever found. They never took a thing. And his house, Ted Binion's house, where Sandy lived with him, that was ransacked as well. But Sandy doesn't have anything. They never found anything on either of them. So
Well, then the report is that the mob somehow got the silver and it ended up in Canada, and I guess that's bogus too.
Well, not in Canada. It never got to Canada. It ended up the property of the estate. The estate sold silver, but the sheriff's department handed it over to the DA's office. It was in custody with them as evidence of I don't know what. And a possession for how long? 5 minutes. And then the DA's office gave it to Ted Binion's estate, his sister, and everybody else.
How did the daughter come out in the inheritance?
Very well, because she's his only heir. And I do believe the estate paid the $300,000 for the private eye who investigated the case. On behalf of the
that's a pretty good fee. I think we're in the wrong business.
Well, I hear that there were, you know, sort of a loan going on, and it also wiped out, you know, a bill he had at Binion's, a rather high one. But if he was successful, it would wipe out that bill.
So they were charging Ted despite the fact that it was his place.
Right, and the thing is exactly. And the thing is, you know, Rick Chavez, you know, and everybody I've spoken to. I mean, the way that whole thing went down, it got into a political campaign, little bad feelings between people. And, I mean, he did everything right. He was notified, and he didn't go there to steal it. You don't go with big old huge white lights, construction lights, to steal something. You know, he went out to...
Yeah, the headlines.
The afternoon, and the sun went down, and so they used the light. The sheriff, they're going out there.
The headlines at the first story I read gave me the impression that there was Rick out there with a shovel.
Unbelievable.
I know.
You have to use a jackhammer to break it open, but it's, you know, he was just going to move it over to the front property. Going to do, and they used it. I mean, it was unbelievable, and there's no evidence anywhere that he was stealing it. And Alisky got thrown out of office, by the way, for election corruption, and he for loading the ballot box, and his opponent really won, and he got knocked out of office.
We're talking about the sheriff of Nye County.
The same one Rick called to say, hey, I'm coming out. And so it's all very, very interesting stuff. And you know, he didn't steal anything.
Well, I think that's how some of the mob stories got along, is the sheriff there certainly was questionable to begin with, out of Nye County.
Oh, they've always been that way.
Yeah.
A lot of things go on in Nye County, but, you know, they go on all over Nevada, I think. But, so that's the story on the silver, and people just buy into it, and they searched their homes, and they never found a... You know, Sandy had a new apartment. They wouldn't let her back in the house, even though, you know, Ted had given it to her in his will. She wasn't allowed back in, and they never found anything.
Is Sandy there now? Or where is Sandy living
now?
Sandy
didn't get it, you know, because she was convicted. They sold the house for $1 million, and she also got the contents. They sold the contents. She didn't get those. And $300,000 he left to her, she didn't get. They didn't give her anything. And she's stays on weekends in California with her parents, and she's got an apartment, I believe, in Henderson, and is preparing for her.
Yeah, I know she went was seen at the Palms Hotel. Her
yeah, she should probably keep a low profile, but you know, she's been in prison for 4 years.
Yeah, when you've been in prison, no, it's not, but you would think it is.
She's written. You think that she, you know, my God, Sandy was in a casino and she was. At a table with someone, and they were gambling. Horrors upon horrors.
Yeah, like you know, that's a crime in Las Vegas. Give me a break. Okay, now where do we stand on the trial itself, Kathy? It starts in October. Are both of them going to be tried at the same time?
Yeah, they. It'll be interesting to see if Rick Chavez's attorney asks to have the trial severed, and two separate trials. It'll be interesting. But as it stands now, they're scheduled to go to start of trial is October 11th. Sandy still does not have a powerhouse of an attorney, but she does have a defense team, and all systems are go. I don't think they asked for a continuance. I believe the judge said he wanted to allow a continuance to get another attorney up to speed.
Now, Bonaventure, I don't quite understand why he's still on the case.
It's a little.
I mean, if he recused himself, would it appear that maybe he might be guilty of something?
Well, he doesn't want. I don't know. I mean, the money's gone, so you know the witness.
Well, that's a reason. That's the first thing I thought of when Dick DeGaren said that Bonaventure was treating him right. I thought, yeah, there's no more money
for a little while.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens in the trial. It certainly didn't happen with Rick Tavish, with Tony Sterns, that he told me.
Well, what about the Las Vegas DA's office here? I mean, they had the cowboy there, Bell, for a while. Now this Roger, what's the deal with him?
Well, David Roger was the prosecutor.
I understand that. I understand that.
He's.
I mean, I'm not asking. I'm not asking you to lose your objectivity, but I'm just kind of digging around here to find out why the DA's office after 6 months, and that's how long it was, wasn't it, before they charged them originally?
Well, it wasn't because of the DA's office. They hired a private eye.
A former cop of Las Vegas.
And best friends with David Roger.
Uh-huh.
He happens to be best friends with David Roger. He ran in, and I was told by homicide cops that he came in, the former homicide cop, no longer employed, an older guy, ran the show as far as the investigation. They pulled away from it. So the police weren't even investigating. It was a private guy who's best friends with the prosecutor. And he took his information that, you know, I think it's all smoke and mirrors. He took it to the coroner's office, and they hired an expert, a medical expert and everything else. And the coroner's report said that he died of, you know, it was inconclusive whether it was suicide or, you know, it was inconclusive, and not suicide. I think it was suicide or accidental death. It was inconclusive, and 6 months. So they got the coroner's office.
Basically,
started rolling.
From an outside guy here, it just looks like they want to make sure that not even a little bit of the money went to Sandy or Rick.
Right.
And so many times these things happen again and again on these cases. Here we have a judge who, to be kind, was not objective. We have Rick and Sandy tied together at the defense table, and it looks like the whole damn thing's going to happen again. Now, Tony Sera can't handle Sandy's case.
No, but he'll be sitting at the same defense table.
Okay.
And he does that. He sits with much lesser attorneys than himself and is successful. You know, and the attorneys at his table aren't always successful with their clients. But he often sits with three defendants, you know, and he's representing one of them. So,
how do you think Sandy ended up with this fellow of 7 years experience or whatever? How did he get in the game?
They needed an attorney in Las Vegas because, you know, if you have an out-of-town attorney, they have to hang their hat in a law firm in Nevada.
Yes, yes.
I was told by DeGaren that he wanted Cristalli because Cristalli, 7 or 8 years ago, used to be a court clerk for Judge Bonaventure. That, to me, is an ooh. But they thought that he would have a rapport with him.
Well, I could see both sides. That'd be a double-edged sword. If nothing else, a man like DeGaren, I would assume, deals a lot in psychology.
Yeah, and
then they would get an inside.
Nevada, though, it's from here,
right.
I think, than it is in Texas. That's where he's from. So we'll see. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I personally feel that the attorneys last time, you could almost see it when it happened. I think the attorneys for them, the defense, gave up. I don't know if they flipped, but I know they gave up. And they were, you know, egregious things were said in court that were just astounding, and nobody stood up to object.
Yeah, I was amazed at that. And then those original attorneys.
They just sat there, and you can't appeal issues if they're not objected to. So I think this time around, it's going to be obvious what's going on, and I think that, you know, hopefully she'll have a better shot at it. But you know, he's only got 7 years trial experience. And I don't even know if he's ever handled a murder case before.
I don't think he has, but who knows for sure. Kathy, we will be talking to you again, and I love your book. In fact, I love all of them. I still like the rapper book you did several years back. That was some great reporting.
It's going to be interesting, but thank you. I really appreciate
it. Talk to you later.